My first impressions of America were shaped when I went as a young woman on a 7-week road trip across the states, from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. We drove hundreds of miles on roads that never curved, along a grid that mankind had imposed on nature. Some days we passed sprawling factories that were pumping out clouds of billowing smoke. Other days we saw vast fields that seemed to go on forever. Everything differed in scale from Europe. Even suburban America, where rows and rows of painted clapboard houses sit proudly on large open plots of immaculately shorn lawns. America exuded a confidence that seemed to be rooted in its power to harness nature to man's will, and I thought of it as an industrial, larger-than-life country. I certainly never thought of it in terms of gardening. Whereas in Britain, everybody seems to be obsessed with their herbaceous borders and vegetable plots. In America, I believed I was more likely to see someone driving a riding mower than pruning roses. Then in 2006, I went to visit Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's mountaintop home in Virginia, and began to understand how wrong I'd been. On a sunny October morning, I stood on Jefferson's vegetable terrace, with straight lines of cabbages and squashes at my feet, and saw man and nature in perfect harmony. In the distance, the horizon seemed to stretch into infinity. Behind me was a manicured lawn lined with ribbons of flowers, and below, a romantic forest that crept into the gardens. The magnificent view from the terrace across the arboreal sea of autumnal reds and oranges of red maples, oaks, hickories, and tulip poplars brought together Jefferson's neat plots of cultivated vegetables and sublime scenery of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Jefferson had combined beauty with utility, the untamed wilderness of the forest with the orderly lines of apples, pears, and cherries in the orchard, and colorful native and exotic flowers with a sweeping panorama across Virginia's spectacular landscape. If nature had been dominated by man, it seemed it was only in order to celebrate it. Later, I couldn't put Monticello out of my mind. I was in the midst of writing about the 18th-century American farmer and plant collector John Bartram, the British obsession with gardens, and the introduction of non-native plants into the English landscape, many of which had been sent by Bartram from the American colonies. The more I learned about Bartram, the more fascinated I became by the American relationship to nature during the 18th century. I pored over the correspondence between John Bartram and Benjamin Franklin, and after my visit to Monticello, I learned that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington had also ordered plants from Bartram, and that James Madison had visited Bartram's garden just before the Great Compromise of the Constitutional Convention in the summer of 1787. I read in John Adams' diaries how much he enjoyed working in his garden, fork in hand. Slowly through records, letters, and diaries, I came to see how vegetable plots, ornamental plants, landscapes, and forests had played a crucial role in America's struggle for national identity and in the lives of the founding fathers.